Hello and welcome to Inside Education with me, Sean Delaney. Inside Education brings you the world of education from an Irish perspective. You can get in touch with the programme through Twitter at InsideEd, by email to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie, or through the programme's website, insideed.com. My guest this week is one of the most prominent and prolific Irish educators over the last four decades. She worked as a civil servant in the Department of Education for 5 years in the 1960s, and although she was forced to leave the civil service when she got married, she later took what she learned about the system to shake it up by reviving multi-denominational education in Ireland. Áine Hyland has been a student and a lecturer in Carisford College. She was a secondary school teacher, she was a professor of education and a vice president of University College Cork. She was also a key player in the establishment of the Dawkey School project, and she has sat on and led several think tanks and policy development groups. When I spoke to Áine Hyland, I first wanted to find out how she came to be so actively involved in the Dawkey School project. She traced this involvement back to her own early educational experiences.
At the age of seven, my father had just been appointed an inspector. We went to live in Cavan, which was his first district. And he enrolled us, the older members of the family, in a school which was run by Lord Farnham It's called Farnham School outside Cavan Town, and it was a landlord school, if you like, from the old days. It had Protestants and Catholics. It was a two-teacher school, and the principal was Church of Ireland, and the assistant teacher was a Catholic. And about half of the children were Protestant, half of us were Catholic. And as far as I was concerned, that was quite normal. We knew the only thing that was different for us was that we went to Catholic instruction in the upstairs room, and the Church of Ireland people stayed in the downstairs room for whatever religious education that they were given.
Was that under the patronage of?
It was under the patronage of Lord Farnham.
Also, was it a private school?
No, national school. It was an original, it was one of the original Stanley Letter schools, if you like. Stanley Letter, as you know, from 1831, envisaged the national school system as being a school in which children of all religions would be educated together. That was the Stanley Letter concept of the national school, combined secular and separate religious instruction. That was what was always intended. But within a couple of decades, the system had gradually became more and more denominational. But the original intention was that a school set up on the land of the landlord would cater for all the children of the estate, if you like, in the broadest sense. In 1949, when I attended that school, the patron of the school was Lord Farnham. Lord Farnham was also manager formally of the school, but there was access to both the clergyman of the Church of Ireland and the parish priest of the parish, Father O'Reilly. I remember him very well because he was a terrifying figure in my childhood. He made me relearn my catechism because I didn't know the Kilmore Catechism. I came from the Diocese of Meath and he was the Diocese of Kilmore. So it was unusual but not at all unique. There were still in the mid 20th century in Ireland, there were still a number of small rural schools which were under the patronage of the landlord, and those schools were religiously mixed. So subsequent to that, obviously, we moved into the town of Cavan. I went to a convent school and I went to a Catholic boarding school. But I was always conscious of the fact that in some parts of Ireland, children all went to school together, regardless of what their religion was. So that was my original background. I got married then later on, and we had two children initially and then another daughter, but our first two children had gone to school in St. Patrick's Church of Ireland School in Dawkey, a small school, not unlike the school I had attended as a child, and indeed my husband had come from a rural area as well, and it was a small two or three or four teacher school. However, in 1973-74, difficulties emerged in St. Patrick's National School in Dawkey. My youngest daughter had just been born, But as a result of the difficulties, when I say difficulties, the difficulties related to a demand, an over-demand for places. There weren't enough places in the school to cater for the need, for the demand for places. And on the instructions of the then Minister for Education, Richard Burke, the manager of the school introduced an enrolment policy which gave priority to children of the Church of Ireland, children who are baptised in the Church of Ireland. And straight away I realised that my youngest daughter, who of course had not been baptised in the Church of Ireland, would not be a priority child for enrolment. So both my husband and I, who had of course been involved in education, he worked in the department, I had worked in the department, but the marriage ban had required me to retire. We realised with other parents in the school that this was a fairly critical decision on the part of the management of the school, not created by the Church of Ireland, but created by the Minister for Education. And basically, I mean, I won't go into the details, but basically it meant that we realised we couldn't change. We tried initially to get the Church of Ireland to change their minds and to accept their role in developing a multi-denominational school, but that didn't happen. And we then realised there was only one way forward, and that was to set up a school which was avowedly from the beginning a multi-denominational school.
So here you are now in the mid-1970s, and you've decided that there's a need to open a school. But because you're going to open a multi-denominational school, it's not as simple as just opening a school. You have to come up with a model of management.
Absolutely.
How did that come about?
Well, for me, it wasn't very difficult. First of all, I knew it was possible, and I'd worked in the Department of Education. I think that's very important. I was a civil servant from 1959, when I did my leaving cert, until 1964, when, because of the marriage ban, of course, I had to give up my job.
In what section of the department were you?
I was in the building section of the Department of Education, primary branch. So as somebody who worked in the buildings branch, I was very familiar with the whole structure of grants for primary schools. I also understood the whole business of patronage, trusteeship, management, because it was part of my job. And I understood the grant system and the recognition system, if you like. I had just completed my master's in education, but when I came to do my master's, I decided that I would like to do a thesis on the whole control and governance of education. So I was, if you like, an expert on that area. And of course, Bill, my late husband, worked in the department as well. He was senior statistician there. And we had just completed 10 years in the mid-60s, the report on investment in education had just been completed. So all of that created, if you like, a curiosity about education and about control and governance that now we could apply to a real life situation. So we knew there was nothing in the rules for national schools that would prevent a group of parents from setting themselves up and seeking recognition as a patron of a school. We also knew that under the Constitution, the parents are, of course, the prime educators. They have the inalienable right to determine the type of education they wanted for their children. And I suppose being aware of all of that, we worked towards this new concept, or was perceived as a new concept in the department, of a school under a patron, which would be a body incorporated as a limited company. And the Dawkey School project was set up as a limited company in 1975, exactly 40 years ago this year. And it took us 4 years to get approval from the Department of Education and from the Minister, but we finally got approval and we were recognised as patron of a national school in 1978, and we set up the school that year.
So it was like as if you had to mimic the structures that were set up really to facilitate the churches.
Yes, we decided from the very beginning that it was probably, well, certainly my view was it would be unrealistic to be taking on too much to try and think of a totally different structure. So certainly myself and Bill always took the point of view that we would get a breakthrough within the system. That would be difficult enough. We felt it would be impossible, and I still think in retrospect it would have been impossible to get approval. Even as it was, we had letters from the department saying, you know, this is not possible. we could write back in and say, yes, it is under section so-and-so of the rules, this is possible. And again, we sort of threw their own rules back at them. And finally, we got the approval. But as I say, it was a very difficult four-year struggle.
And when people think of multi-denominational education in Ireland today, they see it as something that's very much part of the system. But yeah, back in the 1970s, that wasn't the case. So where did you get support and where did you get opposition?
Yeah, well, I think I better start with the opposition first. There was certainly a very, very strong opposing series of voices, starting from the then minister. Richard Burke was vehemently opposed to recognising a multi-denominational school, and many of his senior civil servants were encouraging him in this. I mean, they would have taken the point of view that it was not just anti-establishment, that we were going to undermine the whole structure of Irish education. That was the biggest task we had, was to say, no, we are not talking about dismantling denominational education. All we were asking for, in a system which at that time had about 4,500 national schools, all we're asking for at this stage is one national school to which children of all religions and none will have equal right of access. We had a number of others. We wanted it to be child-centred. We wanted a democratic management as well. But broadly, the key difference was the multi-denominational aspect. And the opposition came from a number of different quarters. There was political opposition, but of course, as always happens, not everybody was against us. Even within the various political parties, we had support, and we always tried to build on the support, cross-party support. If we knew there was some support, for example, within Fine Gael, Garrett Fitzgerald supported us, even though Richard Burke, who was Minister for Education, was really determined not to support us. In Fianna Fáil, we were fortunate that Jack Lynch, who was leader of the Fianna Fáil party at the time, felt that it would be a good idea, particularly in the context of the Northern Troubles, which had just re-emerged.
And he was a former Minister for Education
himself. And he was a former Minister for Education, exactly. So he was supportive. And obviously within Labour, we had very wide support. But we were always careful not to pin our hopes, if you like, on any one party. And finally, the breakthrough came when Fianna Fáil came into government again in 1977. And John Wilson, who was Minister for Education, met with us, agreed that he would support, if you like, the experiment of one multi-denominational school. And he asked us not to be triumphalist about it. And we agreed to keep a low profile. But in fact, I look back on newspaper cuttings of the day, whether we tried to or not, there was a lot of media interest. And of course, there was very strong vocal objections from some groups within the churches, particularly within the Catholic Church.
And the term project, that was because it was
I have to say personally, the founding group had its nucleus from the parents of the children in St. Patrick's National School in Dorky, the Church of Ireland National School, who were aware of the challenge that was now put to us as Irish people, that the Irish government had said, well, Catholic schools are for Catholic children, Church of Ireland schools are for our Church of Ireland children, and so what? The rest of you are not our problem. Mixed marriages, people of different backgrounds, people of no religions, people of religions that had no schools, but the state was not concerned about those. And we felt, I certainly personally, that was when the fire came into my soul, and I felt we have to fight this battle. I didn't enjoy it, I have to say. Some other parents enjoyed it. We had to make compromises. I personally didn't think it should be called a project, and I didn't think it should be called the Dorky School Project, because I felt, and my husband felt, that long term we should be a national movement. We felt that from the very beginning. You see this in the papers, the early papers of our discussions, and that if we put a local name into the title, we could jeopardise our chances of being recognised as a national patron. And in fact, that's what happened initially. And people ask me now, why did the first 10 schools have to set up under separate patronage? The reason was quite simple. The department said, well, you've called yourself the Dorky School Project. Very reluctantly in 77, they gave us permission to be patron of one school in Dorky. So we, to some extent, caused our own problem there. It wasn't until 20 years later that Educate Together got recognition as a patron. And now, of course, all the subsequent schools are under the patronage of Educate Together, which is the sensible thing, in my view.
And even though you didn't start a national movement in one sense, in another sense you did, because you blazed the trail for everyone else.
Yes, but if you read our very first document, which was issued in March, 17th of March 1975, 40 years ago this year, we actually talked of ourselves as a national movement. We did envisage ourselves as a national movement, which is why we were very, very careful to think through our procedures and our processes so that they would be replicable, that they wouldn't just relate to Dorky, that they would be replicable across any part of Ireland in which there was a bottom-up movement like the Dorky parents, if you like.
And how involved did you get in the day-to-day running of the school?
Unfortunately, very involved. We had no choice really in the beginning, because remember, in those early, prior to the opening of the school, we had no principal and we had no staff. When the appointment was made of our first excellent principal, Miss Florrie Armstrong, she was actually in Africa. So in fact, she didn't come back until August. And when she came back, she was recovering from malaria. So in fact, it was the patron body and the interim board of management, with no principal, no leadership from staff, who had to do that. Now, some of us, of course, as you know, I had completed my master's in education by that time. I was a secondary school teacher, but I was also working in Carisford College on a part-time basis, which was both good but also problematic for me personally, because I knew, even though we had a wonderful principal of that college who was a Mercy nun, the college itself was under the management of the Archbishop of Dublin, who was vehemently opposed, naturally, to the setting up of the Dorky School Project. And here was I, a public figure, hoping to get a full-time job sometime in the future, which, thanks eventually to the extraordinary open-mindedness of Sister Regina, I did get the job eventually in 1980, but that was ahead of time. I thought I was going to jeopardise my chances forever of getting a full-time job, but I didn't.
And what do you make of the state of multi-denominational education in Ireland today?
I must say I'm very, very pleased. I think that 40 years later we have 75 schools. We had never envisaged that. Bill, my late husband, who was a statistician, as you know, and was very interested in projecting future enrolments, he projected that in a best case scenario, by the year 2000, we might have 20 schools. But that was a best case scenario, and that it would flatten out a bit after that. We did not envisage that the growth would be as spectacular as it has been. And in fairness to the current staff of Educate Together, they have done a fabulous job. And by getting recognition for the Dorky School Project as patron and setting up procedures and processes and their sheer determination to keep going, they have managed when I was chair of Educate Together in a voluntary capacity, we did well to get a school every two or three years. They have been getting five and six schools per annum recognised. And now, of course, they have second level schools as well.
If we move on to your academic career, Áine, you did your doctoral dissertation in 1982, and the topic was the administration and financing of Irish education from 1830 to 1930. Was it your experience in Dorky that got you interested in that, or did your interest in that area precede Dorky?
No, my interest preceded that. It was my 5 years in the Department of Education as a civil servant. I was an executive officer, which was certainly a good job to have had at that time, but I was fascinated by how the administrative structures of Irish education worked. The whole business of a centralised system in terms of policy, strategy, management and so on, overall management, and then on the other hand, a local school management where each one of our 3,500 national schools reported directly to the Department of Education. So I guess it got me thinking. And also, of course, my experience in Farnham School originally. I'd attended this landlord school, but then few years later, I went into a convent school, a convent national school. And yet these were two national schools. My father was a national school inspector. So I always knew that this very wide variety of different types of schools were all part of the same system. And I wondered how that had evolved. I was very fortunate in Trinity College, where I did my master's, to have attended the lectures by Susan Parks, who was a wonderful lecturer in the history of education. So history of education intrigued me. And I felt this was an area that nobody had looked at, the administration and the financing. And of course, we knew from the Dorkey School project that the financing was ultimately the tool that the department had to control the system.
And what were the more memorable findings from your dissertation research?
The memorable findings, interestingly enough, were that, yeah, policies are important, strategy is important and significant, but individual personalities are crucial. That somebody like Starkey, who became Resident Commissioner of National Education in 1900, he was the effective Secretary General of the department from 1900 to 1922, he introduced a whole new curriculum, for example, eventually very effectively, but very controversially, because his personality was very acerbic and difficult. And then I began to think through how individuals can be so significant, and to think about various ministers, various secretary generals, and to look at our own experience. Somebody like John Wilson or Brian Lenehan, the old Brian Lenehan, men and women like Mary O'Rourke, Gemma Hussey, in fairness, who, and Niamh Brannock, who had been wonderful ministers for the Educate Together movement, and indeed backed by secretary generals like Don Thornhill, who came in with the Green Paper and the White Paper period, without whom those changes that were essential in, not just in policy, but ultimately in legislation. I mean, Micheál Martin, in fairness, who brought in the 1998 Education Act, and who looked and who wrote into that act, ensured that diversity and recognition of difference would be part of our education system. And the current Secretary General, Seán Fáilleau, who has been very supportive in his own, recognising the limitations of his power, and of course Rory Quinn. And so you have policy on the one hand, and you have government documents on the one hand, but then on the other hand, you have the individual ministers and senior civil servants who will either drive or block change. And I think that was a very big thing for me to learn.
You became a senior lecturer then in Carysfort College in 1980. Yeah. But did you also spend time as a student in Carysfort?
Yes. Before I went into the civil service in 1959, I'd done my leaving cert. I'd spent 6 years in convent boarding school in Ballymahon, County Longford. I was very happy there, had a very good experience, got a very good leaving cert, and always wanted to be a teacher. And I went into Carysfort in September 1959. And I have to say, my 2 months, 3 months that I spent there were very unhappy. Carysfort, and I wouldn't be alone in saying this about teacher training colleges, but particularly Carysfort in the 1940s and 50s, it was a very repressive environment, very anti-intellectual. Questioning was strongly discouraged. And it was a very disappointing experience for me, because I was looking forward so much to being in a higher education, third level environment. My own convent boarding school had been limited because it was a tiny, very, very small school, and the teachers, you know, they were all nuns, and our library was limited. But we were never discouraged from questioning or from being intellectual, if you like, in our very limited way. And now I come to Carysfort, where there was a decidedly anti-intellectual approach. Conformity and obedience were what mattered. And of course, if you think about it, they wanted teachers to go out into the parishes throughout Ireland to be obedient and conform. But when I was then successful in the civil service examination, which I had done during that summer, I got an offer of a job as an executive officer. I decided to leave Carysfort, although I was sorry to leave teaching, because I liked teaching, but I felt it wasn't going to work for me in that environment. And of course, I subsequently went back as an evening student in UCD and did my degree at night and became a secondary teacher. So of course, I did become a teacher eventually, but the roundabout way. I had spent 5 years in the Department of Education. I met Bill in the department. We got married. Once I got married, I had to leave the department. I had no choice. The marriage ban was there. I was appointed by Sister Regina in 1980 as a senior lecturer and admissions officer in Carysfort College. And that was a very courageous step on her part because I had been involved in the Educate Together movement. But I spent 6 years there, and then when government took a decision to withdraw grants from Carysfort and it was closed, we were all provided with a variety of different opportunities for redeployment, basically. And UCD was what worked out for me, and I was very happy to go there. And I was there for 7 years until, separately and independently, I applied for the professorship in Cork, and I was appointed Professor of Education in Cork in 1993. In fact, I was one of the few people, I was offered two professorships that year. I was offered the professorship in Galway, National University of Ireland, Galway, and in Cork, but I accepted Cork.
Your area was always history of education.
But I became increasingly, because my master's thesis had been on, even though it was a historical perspective, it was a historical perspective on curriculum and curriculum planning and curriculum change. So I had always been interested in the theory of curriculum. And from the early 80s on, when Gemma Hussey became Minister of Education, she nominated me as one of the members of the Curriculum and Examinations Board, the first and the predecessor of the NCCA. So I'd, even though history of education was, strictly speaking, my area of expertise, I became very interested and was always interested in curriculum, both from a historical perspective and from a contemporary perspective.
And on next week's programme, we'll return to Áine Hyland's ideas on curriculum and education policy from both historical and contemporary perspectives. But that is where we must leave the discussion for this week. Thanks to Áine Hyland for her time and to Donal McLachlan Byrne, President of Trinity Students' Union, who allowed us to use his office to record the interview. If you'd like to suggest someone who would be an interesting guest on a future programme, please write to insideeducation@dublincityfm.ie. You can listen to podcasts of all previous Inside Education programmes on insideed.com. Until the same time next week, this is Sean Delaney signing off. Thank you for listening.